منتجبين وعلى جميع الأنبياء والمرسلين. اللهم أجل لوليك الفرج والعافية والنصر، واجعلنا من خير أنصاره وأوانه والمستشهدين بين يديه. جناب آقای رئیس، همکاران محترم، خداوند.
Mr. President, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I am grateful to the Almighty God who has granted me the opportunity to appear before this World Assembly once again. I wish to begin by commemorating those who lost their lives in the horrible flood in Pakistan and express my heartfelt sympathy with the families who lost their loved ones, as well as with the people and the government of Pakistan. I urge everyone to assist their fellow men and women as a humane duty. Allow me to thank His Excellency Mr. Ali Abdussalam Tereki, the President of the 64th Session of the United Nations General Assembly, for all his efforts during his tenure. And I would also like to congratulate Mr. Joseph Tace, the President of the 65th Session of the United Nations General Assembly, and wish him all success. Dear colleagues, in past years, I spoke to you about some hopes and concerns. Some concerns involve the crisis in families, the security challenge, disrespect for human dignity, the deterioration of world economy, climate change, and disregard for human aspirations to achieve justice and lasting peace. After about 100 years of domination, the capitalist system and existing world order are unable to provide appropriate solutions to the problems that society faces. Thus, their demise has arrived. Therefore, I shall try to examine several causes for their failure and picture features for an ideal order. The first cause relates to our attitudes and beliefs. As you are well aware, divine prophets had the mission to invite everyone to monotheism, to love and justice, and to show mankind the path to prosperity. They invite men to contemplation and to seek knowledge in order to better appreciate the truth and to refrain from atheism and egoism. The essence of the message of prophets is one and the same. Every messenger has endorsed the messenger before him and given glad tidings about the next prophet to come, who presented a more complete version of the religion in accordance with man's capacity at the time. This trend continued until the last messenger of God, who presented the perfection of an all-inclusive religion. In opposition to the call by the prophets, the egoists and greedy stood up against their clear call, revolting against their messages. Nimrod countered Hazrat Abraham. Pharaoh countered Hazrat Moses. And the greedy countered Hazrat Jesus Christ and Hazrat Muhammad, may peace be upon all our prophets. In the recent centuries, human ethics and values have been rejected as a cause for backwardness. They were even portrayed as opposing wisdom and science because the proclaimers of religion in the dark ages of the West inflicted man with backwardness. Therefore, man's disconnection from heaven has detached him from his true self. Man, with his potential to understand the secrets of the universe, his instinct to seek truth, his aspiration for justice and perfection, his quest for beauty and purity, and his capacity, as God has said, to represent him on earth, has been reduced to a creature restricted by the materialistic world, with a mission to maximize individualistic pleasures. Human instinct then replaced true human nature. Human beings and nations are considered rivals, and the happiness of an individual or a nation is upheld at the cost of others, to the point of even eliminating or suppressing others, rather than developing a constructive and evolutionary method of cooperation. It was replaced by a destructive struggle for survival. The lust for capital and domination replaced monotheism, which is the gate to love and unity. This widespread clash of the egoist and the divine with the divine values gave way to slavery and colonialism. A large part of the world came under the domination of a few Western states. Tens of millions of people were taken to slavery, and tens of millions of families were shattered as a result. All the resources, the rights, and the cultures of the colonized nations were plundered. Lands were occupied, and indigenous people were humiliated and mass murdered. Yet nations rose up. Colonialism was alienated, and the independence of nations was recognized. Thus, the hope for respect, prosperity, and security was revived amongst nations. In the beginning of the past century, beautiful mottos of freedom, human rights, and democracy created hopes for healing the deep wounds of the past. Today, however, not only those dreams are not realized, but memories, even at times more bitter than before, have been recorded in our history. As a result of the two world wars, the occupation of Palestine, the Korean and the Vietnam wars, the Iraq war against Iran, the occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as many wars in Africa, hundreds of millions of people were killed, wounded, or displaced. Terrorism, illicit drug production, poverty, and the social gaps have increased. The dictatorial and coup d'etat governments in Latin America committed unprecedented crimes with the support of the West. Instead of disarmament, the proliferation and stockpiling of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons expanded, placing the world under a larger threat. As a result, apparently, the very same old goals of colonialists and the slave masters war pursued, but this time around with a new facade. The second cause for the failure of the existing world order and capitalism has to do with the current global management and its ruling structures. The League of Nations and after that the United Nations were established with the promise to bring about peace, security, and the realization of human rights, which in fact meant a global management. One can analyze the current system of governance of world affairs by examining three events. The first is the event of the 11th September 2001, which has indeed affected the entire world for almost a decade. We recall that at the time, suddenly, the news of an attack on the Twin Towers was broadcast using numerous footages of the incident. Almost all governments and known figures that mattered strongly condemned this incident. But then, a propaganda machine came into full force. It was implied that the whole world was now exposed to a huge danger, namely that of terrorism, and that the only way to save the world would be to deploy forces into Afghanistan. eventually Afghanistan and shortly thereafter Iraq were occupied. Now please take note. It was said that some 3,000 people were killed on September 11, for which we are all very saddened. Yet, up until now, in Afghanistan and Iraq, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed, millions wounded and displaced, and the conflict is still going on and expanding. In identifying those responsible behind the September 11 attack, there were three viewpoints. First, that a very powerful and complex terrorist group, able to successfully cross all layers of the American intelligence and security, carried out the attack. This is the prevalent viewpoint, which has been supported mainly and advocated by American statesmen. Second, that some segments within the U.S. government orchestrated the attack to reverse the declining American economy and its grips on the Middle East in order to save the Zionist regime. The majority of the American people, as well as most nations and politicians around the world, agree with this view. Third, it was carried out by a terrorist group, but that the American government supported and took advantage of the situation. Apparently, this viewpoint has fewer proponents. The main evidence for this viewpoint links the incident with a few passports found in the huge volume of rubble, and a video of an individual whose place of domicile was unknown, but it was announced that he had been involved in oil deals with some American officials. It was also covered up and said that due to the explosion and fire, no trace of suicide attackers was found. Regardless of each of these three viewpoints, there remain a few questions to be answered. First, would it not have been sensible that first a thorough investigation should have been conducted by independent groups to conclusively identify the elements involved in the attack and then map out a rational plan to take measures against them? Second, assuming the viewpoint of the American government, is it rational to launch a classic war through widespread deployment of troops that led to the death of hundreds of thousands of people to counter a terrorist group? Third, was it not possible to act the way Iran conducted the Rigi operations, fighting the Rigi terrorist group who killed and wounded 400 innocent people in the Iranian operation? No innocent person was harmed. It is proposed that the United Nations set up an independent fact-finding group for the event of September 11, so that in the future expressing views about it, so that to ensure that the different views about it are not banned from discussion in the future. I wish to announce here that next year the Islamic Republic of Iran will host a conference to study terrorism and the means to confront it. I invite officials, scholars, thinkers, researchers, and research institutes of all countries to attend this conference. The second cause for the demise of the existing world order is the occupation of the Palestinian territories. The oppressed people of Palestine have lived under the rule of an occupying regime for 60 years, been deprived of freedom, security and the right to self-determination, while the occupiers are given recognition. On a daily basis, the houses are being destroyed over the heads of innocent women and children. People are deprived of water, food and medicine in their own homeland. The Zionists have imposed 5 all-out wars on their neighboring countries and on the Palestinian people. The Zionists committed the most horrible crimes against the defenseless people in the wars against Lebanon and Gaza. The Zionist regime attacked a humanitarian flotilla in a blatant defiance of all international norms and kills civilians. This regime, which enjoys the absolute support of some Western countries, regularly threatens the countries in the region and continues publicly to announce the assassination of Palestinian figures, while Palestinian defenders and those opposing this regime are pressured, labeled as terrorists and called anti-Semites. All values, even that of the freedom of expression, which in Europe and the United States seem to matter so much and are so important, have been sacrificed at the altar of Zionism. Solutions are doomed to fail because the right of the Palestinian people is not taken into account. Would we have witnessed such horrendous terrorists and called anti-Semites? All values, even that of the freedom of expression, which in Europe and the United States seem to matter so much and are so important, have been sacrificed at the altar of Zionism. Solutions are doomed to fail because the right of the Palestinian people is not taken into account. Would we have witnessed such horrendous crimes if instead of recognizing the occupation, the sovereign right of the Palestinian people had been recognized? Our unambiguous proposition is the return of the Palestinian refugees to their homeland and the reference to the vote of the people of Palestine, all Palestinians, to exercise their sovereignty and decide on the type of government. The third cause for the demise of the existing order has to do with the outlook on nuclear energy. Nuclear energy is clean and cheap and a heavenly gift, which is amongst the most suitable alternatives to cut pollutions emanating from fossil fuels. The Non-Proliferation Treaty allows all member states to use nuclear energy without limit, and the International Atomic Energy Agency is mandated to provide member states with technical and legal support. The nuclear bomb is the worst inhumane weapon and one which must totally be eliminated. The NPT prohibits its development and stockpiling and calls for nuclear disarmament. Nonetheless, please note that some of the permanent members of the Security Council and nuclear powers, i.e. those who hold the nuclear bomb, have resorted to a measure. They have equated nuclear energy with the nuclear bomb and have distanced this energy from the reach of most nations by establishing monopolies and pressuring the IAEA, while at the same time they have continued to maintain, expand and upgrade their own nuclear arsenals. You may have heard that in the current year the United States administration has asked for $80 billion to upkeep its nuclear bombs alone. This has entailed the following. Not only the nuclear disarmament has not been realized, but also nuclear bombs have been proliferated in some regions, including by the occupying and intimidating the Zionist regime. I would like here to propose that the year 2011 be proclaimed the year of nuclear disarmament and nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. In all these cases, of course, I admit that the United Nations has been unable to take any effective course of action that has been viable or meaningfully viable. Unfortunately, in the decade proclaimed by it as the International Decade for the Culture of Peace, for example, hundreds of thousands were killed and injured as a result of war, aggression and occupation and hostilities and antagonism have increased. Ladies and gentlemen, very recently the world witnessed an abhorrent and inhumane act of burning the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is the divine book and the eternal miracle of the Prophet of Islam. It calls for worshipping the one God, justice, compassion toward people, development and progress, reflection and thought, defense of the oppressed and resistance against oppressors. And it names with respect the previous messengers of God, like Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Joseph, Moses, and Jesus Christ, may peace be upon all the prophets, and endorses them. They burned the Quran to burn all these truths and good judgments. However, the truth cannot be burned. Quran is eternal because God and truth are everlasting. This act and any other act which widens the gap and distances between nations is evil. We must wisely avoid playing into the hands of Satan. On behalf of the Iranian nation, I pay respect to all divine books and their followers. This is the Quran, and this is the Bible. We pay respect to both books, as both are dear to us. Dear friends, esteemed friends, for years, the inefficiency of capitalism and the existing world management structures have been exposed enough for us to understand what they mean. And the majority of states and people have begun a quest for fundamental changes and for the to allow justice and global relations to prevail. The cause for the United Nations' ineptitude is its unjust structure. Major powers have monopolized the Security Council due to their veto privilege and sidelined the General Assembly, which is the main pillar of the organization. In the past several decades, at least one of the permanent members of the Security Council has always been a party to a conflict when both the judge and the defender or prosecutor are on the same side of the conflict. How can you expect justice? They feel immune as a result of the aggressions due to the structure of the United Nations. For example, if Iran enjoys the veto privilege, would the Security Council and the IAEA Director General have taken the same position on its nuclear issue as they have today? Dear friends, the United Nations is the key center for coordinating common global management. Its structure needs to be reformed in a manner that all independent states and nations are able to participate in the global governance and actively and constructively. The veto privilege should be revoked, and the General Assembly should be the highest body, and the Secretary General should be the most independent official, and all his positions and activities should be taken with approval of the General Assembly and should be directed towards promoting justice and eliminating discrimination in the world order. The Secretary General should not come under pressure from powers and or the country hosting the organization, that is the United Nations, for stating the truth and administering justice. It is proposed that the General Assembly hold within a year and in the framework of an extraordinary session finalize the reformation of this body's structure, the United Nations structure, that is. The Islamic Republic of Iran has clear proposals in this regard and suggestions and stands ready to participate actively and constructively in the process. Ladies and gentlemen, I announce clearly that the occupation of other countries under the pretext of freedom and democracy is an unforgivable crime. The world needs the logic of compassion and justice and inclusive participation instead of the logic of force, domination, unilateralism, war, and humiliation. The world needs to be governed by virtuous people like the divine prophets. The two vast geographical spheres, namely Africa and Latin America, have gone through historic developments during the past decade that have altered their fates. The new approaches in these two continents, which are based on increasing level of integration and unity, as well as on localizing the growth and development models, have borne considerable fruit to the people of those regions. The awareness and wisdom of the leaders of these two continents has overcome the regional problems and crises without and free of the domineering interference of non-regional powers. The Islamic Republic of Iran has expanded its relations with Latin America and Africa in all aspects in recent years. And about the glorious Iran, the Tehran Declaration was a hugely constructive step in confidence-building efforts, which was made possible through the admirable goodwill by the governments of Brazil and Turkey, along with the close and sincere and honest cooperation of the Iranian government. Although the declaration received inappropriate reactions by some Western powers and was followed by an unlawful resolution, it still holds valid. We have observed the regulations of the IAEA more than our commitments, yet we have never submitted to illegally imposed pressures, nor will we ever do so. It has been said that they seek to pressure Iran into a dialogue. Well, firstly, Iran has always been ready for a dialogue based on respect and justice. Secondly, the methods based on disrespecting nations have long become ineffective. Those who have used intimidation and sanctions in response to the clear logic of the Iranian nation are in real terms destroying the remaining credibility of the Security Council and the trust of nations for this body, proving once and again how unjust is the function of the Council. When they threaten a great nation, a great people such as Iran, which is known throughout history for its scientists, poets, artists, and philosophers, and whose culture and civilization is synonymous to purity, submission to God, and seeking justice, how can they ever expect that other nations have confidence in them? My friends, it goes without saying that domineering methods in managing the world, and namely capitalism, have failed. Not only has the era of slavery and colonialism and domineering the world passed, the path to the revival of old empires are now blocked as well. We have announced that we stand ready for a serious and free debate with the American statesmen to express our transparent views on issues of importance to the world in this very venue. It is proposed right here that in order to have a constructive dialogue, an annual free debate be organized within the General Assembly. In conclusion, dear colleagues and friends, the Iranian nation and the majority of the world's nations and governments are opposed to the current discriminatory management of the world. This inhumane nature of management has put it at a dead end and requires a major overhaul. Reforming the world's affairs and bringing about tranquility and prosperity requires the participation of all. pure thought and the divine and human management that we have been given. We are all of the idea and view that justice is the basic element for peace, durable security, and the spread of love among peoples and nations. It is in justice that mankind seeks the realization of his aspirations, rights, and dignity, since he is wary of oppression, humiliation, and ill treatment. The true nature of mankind is manifested in the love for other fellow humans and the love for all good in the world. Love is the best foundation for establishing relations amongst people and amongst nations. As Vahshi Vahri, the great Iranian poet, says, quote, "From the fountain of youth, drink 1,000 sips. You'll still die if you don't have love's grip." Unquote. In making a world full of purity, safety, and prosperity, people are not rivals but companions. Those who seek their happiness but in the sorrow of others, and their welfare and safety but in others' insecurity, those who see themselves superior to others are out of the path of humanity and are in evil, are only tools, some tools, to serve others, to create friendship and strengthen human connections for spiritual perfection. They are not tools for show-off or means of dominating others. Men and women complement each other and fed family units with pure, loving, and long-lasting relations of the spouses, which becomes the center and the guarantee for the continuity and the bringing up of generations for true pleasure, for spreading true love, and for reforming societies. Women, the woman is a reflection of God's beauty and is the source of love and care. She is the guardian of purity and exquisiteness of society. The tendency to toughen the soul and behavior of women deprives them from their very basic right of being a loving mother and a caring wife. It would result in a more violent society with irreversible defects. Freedom is a divine right that should serve peace and human perfection. Dear colleagues, pure thoughts and the will of the righteous are keys to the gates of a pure life full of hope, liveliness, and beauty. This is the promise of God that the earth will be inherited by the pure and the righteous, and the people free from selfishness will take up the management of the world. Then there will be no trace of sorrow, discrimination, poverty, insecurity, and aggression. The time for true happiness and for the blossoming of the true nature of humankind, the way God has intended, will arrive. All those seeking for seeking justice and all the free spirits have been waiting for this moment and have been promised such glorious times. The complete human, the true servant of God and the true friend of mankind, whose father was from the generation of the beloved Prophet of Islam and whose mother was from the true believers of the Jesus Christ, shall wait along with Jesus, the Son of Mary, and the other righteous to appear on those brilliant days and assist humanity in welcoming them. We should join ranks and see justice as would be befitting of men. Praise to love and worship. Praise to justice and freedom. Praise to the true humanity, the complete human, the true companion of humankind. And peace be upon you and all the righteous and the pure. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much.
That was the Iranian president, Mr. Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, speaking at the United Nations General Assembly in New York, giving a very detailed speech, covering quite a few topics there, a few of those topics. He started off talking about the Pakistan flood, saying that everyone needs to help out with that. He spoke about capitalism, 9/11, and how there's an investigation needed for that. He also spoke about Israel-Palestine. He also spoke about the occupation of Palestine again. He spoke about the outlook on nuclear energy, about how it is cheap and clean, etc. He spoke about the burning of the Quran in the U.S. and how that degrades a book which actually speaks about all divine prophets with respect. He also spoke about the Tehran Declaration and how it was received within the West. And he also spoke about how the Iranians want a free debate with American statesmen. Well, to discuss this a bit further, we're now joined by Mr. Ghanbar Nadiri, who is a journalist and political analyst, joining us here in our studios in Tehran. Mr. Nadiri, thank you very much for joining us. Now, I'd like to start off by asking you about Mr. Ahmadinejad's take on capitalism and its failures. What can you tell us about the fact that he said that capitalism's, one of capitalism's many failures is that it hasn't solved any of the world's current problems?
First of all, thank you for having me here, because this is a very important night, and we just heard a very important speech. Obviously, you can see, you saw it with your own eyes, that Mr. Ahmadinejad managed to stole the spotlight at the UN, but not only at the UN. He's also the only president that has been talking to the U.S. Students. He's the only person that has been talking to the U.S. media, and everybody is more than willing to hear what he has to say. And today it was a very beautiful speech, and he touched upon many important points. As you said, capitalism, what he said, basically, capitalism has failed to manage the world properly for the simple fact that it is under the siege of greedy financial groups and individuals, and for that reason we have all these problems at the global economy. What he said, that it wasn't just the capitalism that failed everybody, it was also the failure of the world to return to divine roots, to listen to the words of God in Bible and Quran. And also he said that the reason the humanity has failed is because the global management has failed. Those who are managing the world have been unable to manage the world properly and efficiently. But of course he didn't just leave everybody there. He came up with a solution, very simple solution. He said that we need democracy and we need to return to divine roots.
Right, and moving on to the topic of 9/11, which was, of course, very exciting because U.S. and U.K. officials walked out at one point.
Exactly.
in this mention of his 9/11. Now, at the time that they walked out, it was interesting, at least I thought, because he was mentioning the third point of view of 9/11. He said that there is one point of view where it says that the 9/11 was carried out by a terrorist group, but that the U.S. then took advantage of that. Could you explain why it was significant for the U.S. and U.K. officials to walk out at that specific time?
Well, the walkout is a very beautiful example of how easily the Americans are avoiding any constructive dialogue with Iran. So you can see, you saw it with your own eyes, people saw it, your viewers, all of them, saw with their own eyes that the Americans are not willing to talk to Iran. Because Iran, what Iran says makes sense, and they don't want to listen to that. Americans don't like anything that is going to question their authority, their credibility, and what they have been doing to the rest of the international community. It's not the first time, and it's not going to be the last time. Quite the opposite. When President Obama was talking, Iranian delegation was sitting there, each and every member of the delegation was sitting there and listening to what he had to say. So this means that Iran is willing to listen to what Americans want to say, but the Americans are doing exactly the opposite. Obviously, we had 9/11 commission, but Ahmadinejad said that it failed to give a proper answer, and for the failure we have this problem now in Afghanistan and Iraq, because they took advantage of the situation, the attack, and they attacked and invaded and occupied Afghanistan and Iraq. So what again, he didn't leave us without any solution. He said that the UN has to step in, because the 9/11 commission in the United States failed. The UN has to step in and set up a fact-finding mission that will include many different independent organizations and bodies, and they can look into the problem and find the answers that people are asking for the past 9 or 10 years. I don't know.
Do you see such a commission succeeding if it was to be established?
Why not? That's the whole point. Mr. Ahmadinejad is saying that we need an all-inclusive United Nations, we shouldn't have a couple of countries to have the veto power there. We want everybody to have a say. And he said that General Assembly is the solution. At the same time, he also touched upon a very sensitive issue that Iran is quite contrary to what the Americans are alleging. Iran is more than any other country active in fighting the global, involved in global fight against terrorism. That's what he said, that next year in Tehran we will have a conference on the fight against global terrorism, and everybody, including the United States, is welcome to attend.
Right, so I mean, talking about that conference not to be held in Iran, do you think attendance will be high, and do you think that the U.S. may even send somebody to such a conference?
Well, if they don't send it, they are the losers. I mean, if they are serious and genuine in their voices about the fight, then they should be the first. They should be sitting on the front row. They should be doing the same thing. And remember, we had similar nuclear energy for all and nuclear weapons for no one, which took place a couple of months ago, and so many countries took part in that conference, especially the members of the non-aligned movement. So I mean, if a couple of countries do not attend, like the United States or France or Germany or the United Kingdom, it doesn't mean that the conference has failed, because these handful of countries do not, I repeat, do not represent the international community and do not speak for the rest of the world.
Right, I'd like to move on now to the occupation of Palestine, which you of course mentioned. An interesting point that he mentioned was that even freedom of expression, which Western countries hold up as very important, is always ignored when it comes to conversations about Israel. How important was that statement to you?
Well, I mean, the reason we have this kind of, you know, blackout about the issue in Palestine is because the media in the West is being organized, managed and run by pro-Zionist groups and individuals. That's why we hear very few news about what is really going on in occupied Palestine. Ahmadinejad talked about the sorry state of affairs in Palestine. He talks about the crimes committed against Palestinians in Gaza and in Lebanon. He also talked about how freely Israel continues to threaten to assassinate each and every individual, especially Palestinian leaders. So what he was saying, it was a crying out. For the simple fact that he said that nobody is touching upon these important things. And at the same time, he felt sorry that the West still keeps supporting the Israeli regime, and that's a very, very, you know, sad scenario that is happening now. At the same time, again, he didn't leave us with any solution. He said that we have a solution for Palestine, which is, by the way, much, much, much and more constructive than what we are having in the West, like the so-called peace talks between the Palestinian Authority and Israel. He said that the Palestinians should be allowed to return to their countries. He was talking about the Palestinian refugees, and there should be a general referendum for the Palestinians and the Jews to decide how their country wants should be run from now on. That this is very quiet and simple. But unfortunately, Mr. Ahmadinejad forgot to mention two points, which I personally think is very important and sensitive. He forgot to say that the Israelis have to release all the Palestinian prisoners. They should be freed, because most of these people are women and children that have been caught and are in custody for years because they took part in anti-Israeli demonstration and anti-occupation demonstration or anti-settlement activities. Also, he forgot to mention that Israel has to stop building new settlements on Palestinian territories. Of course, this is also an important point that Mr. Obama said in his speech.
Right. I'd like to move on, of course, to his mentioning of the burning of the Quran, which is, of course, a very sensitive issue, especially in this part of the world, considering it affects Muslims especially. He says that although the Quran calls for the worshipping of one God, they still burnt the Quran, even though it mentions all prophets. It actually gives respect to all prophets of all religions worldwide. And then he held up the Quran at one very, very powerful point in his speech. He held up the Quran and the Bible and said he respects both books. What do you make of what he said about the burning of the Quran?
Make no mistake, it's not Ahmadinejad who is respecting these two books. It's not just him. The whole of the Muslim world respects Bible and Quran for the simple fact that both of them are the words of God. You will never ever see a Muslim burning the Holy Bible. You will never ever see a Muslim anywhere in the world, even the extremists, burning the Holy Bible for their own political agenda. And Mr. Ahmadinejad said that, listen, we respect your book, you are supposed to respect our book because these are the words of God. But at the same time, he said that you cannot burn truth. You cannot burn the truth because God and truth are not burnable. I don't know how you want to put that, but you cannot do that. But at the same time, he said that Iran respects all religions of the world, and including Christianity. And as you just said beautifully, he again stole the spotlight. He picked up both holy books, and he showed to the international community that you will never ever see us disrespecting the Holy Bible, even though you disrespected our holy book.
And finally, I'd like to talk about the very important declaration saying that this was a confidence-building measure, and though it was not well received by some Western countries, and he said that then, beyond that, then there was the illegal sanctions put on. He then went on, and this is all, of course, is all connected, because then he also mentioned that he's opposed to the discriminatory management of the world through the UN, where some countries, like you had mentioned, Israel, always knows that it's immune because of the U.S.'s veto power. So what can we say about the U.N. structure and the proposals that he put forth?
I regret to let your viewers know that this has been going on, not now, this has been going on for the past 60 or 70 years. I don't know the exact date that the United Nations was formed. Since then, we've got a couple of veto-yielding, self-appointed veto-yielding bully boy powers who are controlling everything that is going on inside the United Nations, especially key decisions made by the UN Security Council. Mr. Ahmadinejad regretted the fact that because of these problems, these structural problems, Iran has all these problems surrounding his peaceful nuclear program. If, he said, if Iran had the veto power, Iran would have never had his case referred to the UN Security Council, in where they illegally imposed a couple of sanctions against the country. But as you said about the General Assembly, again he said that I have a solution. It has to be scrapped. The UNSC, the United Nations Security Council, has to be scrapped completely. Nobody should have any veto power, even Iran, in any country. No country. At the same time, all the powers should be given to the General Assembly. And that's where the key decisions will be made. And I am certain, and I am positive, and I am hopeful that there will be no biased policy or decision coming out of that world body.
Right, that was Mr. Ghanbar Nadiri joining us here in the studios in Tehran. He was a journalist and political analyst. We thank you very much for your comments. That concludes our coverage of Mr. Ahmadinejad's speech at the United Nations. We'll be back in about 3 minutes.